So it's an interesting Dharma talk tonight. Tonight in the Christian tradition is the feast of John the Evangelist and the Apostle. And he is the author of the fourth gospel as well as three letters in the New Testament. And for those who are not familiar with Christianity, I'll just say the four Gospels, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, they're in a way biographies of Jesus. They're not biographies in our modern sense. But the first three have a lot in common. The first three have a certain style of storytelling. They share similar perspectives. They share parables in common. They're very straightforward in their narrative. And the fourth Gospel, the Gospel of John, is much more poetic in its presentation. It's very different, a very different kind of presentation of the Jesus story. And one thing that is really striking in the Gospel of John, there are a number of dramatic moments when Jesus says, "I am this, I am that." And these are called the Johannine I statements, these dramatic moments where Jesus attributes something to himself. And so I'm going to read through the major Johannine I statements. I am the bread of life. I am the light of the world. He who follows me will not walk in darkness, but will have the light of life. I am the good shepherd. I know my own, and my own know me. I am the resurrection and the life. I am the way, the truth, and the life. I am the vine, you are the branches. So these are the major Johannine I statements, and then there, each one, there's some variations of them. And I was fascinated with these, and I'm interested in looking at them not only from the perspective of Christianity, but also just in an interreligious perspective, because of what they reveal, the combination of them reveal about the presence of the sacred and the picture they give us of the sacred in these statements. And so the first one, I am the bread of life. This fundamental idea that we get nourishment from the sacred, that to be human, we have several other needs and several other kinds of things that we hunger for, but in addition to all the others, we also hunger for the sacred. And there's something that is satisfied by the sacred that is not satisfied by any combination of ordinary worldly experiences. And I think this is something that was well recognized, certainly well recognized in traditional society, well recognized in any society where traditional religion is practiced. And it's something that I think is really not very well recognized in modern secular society. I think there are many people who have this hunger and don't know that they have this hunger. In fact, I think a lot of times consumerism is driven by a kind of trying to fill up this hunger that can't be filled with material goods. And so then that is one just very basic statement about our condition as being human, that we have a hunger for the sacred, and that the sacred, there's something profoundly nourishing there for us. The next statement, I am the light of the world. He who follows me will not walk in darkness, but have the light of life. And this one, I think there are a couple ways to think about this one. I am the light of the world. One is light as guidance, the idea when the light is on, we can see where we're going, and when we're in the dark, we can't see where we're going. There certainly is a kind of guidance that comes from the sacred. And I think it's something that we have access to when we really become silent and still within. We can get that sense. And it's fascinating because it's not information the way that the head would like information. The head wants the whole story at once. You know, tell me the whole story. Tell me how it's going to wind up. You know, and that's not the nature of the information we get from the sacred. The sacred is much more, it tells us the next step we need to take in that moment. You know, it doesn't satisfy the head's need for a complete picture. But certainly there's this way that we can hear, as it were, the whisper of the sacred when deep in our own silence. But I think there's a whole other way to think about I'm the light of the world. When we're deeply present in the world and we sense the sacred, the presence of the sacred in the world, there's a way that the world sparkles, that it glimmers with a kind of light. And this is also the light of the world. This quality that is revealed when our attention is very vital and keen. Now the next one, I am the Good Shepherd. This is one that I know it would rub many Americans the wrong way, because the implication is if God is the shepherd, we're the sheep, you know? And there's not much positive, usually people don't have positive connotations with being the sheep, you know, that sort of thing. And I think I would say we live in a society that valorizes the kinds of virtues that have to do with being active, with putting yourself out there, taking the risks, pushing the boundary, exploring the new thing. And that's one important side of life, and that's one important side of growth. But there's a whole other side of life that I think this society neglects. And that is all the wisdom that comes from letting go, surrendering, being quiet. This whole other side, you might say the wisdom of yin rather than the wisdom of yang. And it's this profound thing about the sacred. When we really start to enter with the sacred, we have to realize we're not in the driver's seat. We're not in control, you know? And that there is a way that the sacred guides us and even takes care of us in ways that we can't understand. And so there is, how can I say, there's a relationship of dependence that is hard to put into words. And I think, how can I say, I think someone who's a conventional Christian, for example, readily understands this nature of dependence on God, and God is the shepherd and we are the sheep. And I think this is something that might be a little more difficult for people that are coming from, you know, sort of say American take on Buddhism or something like that. It requires a certain amount of sacrifice of ego, which is actually one of the things that's quite beautiful about it. And similarly, very, very in a similar vein to I am the Good Shepherd, also I am the vine and you are the branches. Again, this whole idea that my individuality is assumed in a larger whole. Ultimately, this is... This is, I would say, the mystical truth that is captured in the American slogan, E Pluribus Unum, the unit of experience coming out of our multiplicity of experiences. Now, the next one I want to talk about, I am the resurrection and the life. I think the framing story for this is very important. Jesus had been informed, so this is in John's gospel, Jesus had been informed that his friend Lazarus was very sick. Lazarus was the brother of his friends Mary and Martha. And then he got word that Lazarus had died, and then he goes to visit. And when Jesus comes, Martha heard that Jesus was coming and went out to meet him while Mary sat in the house. And Martha said to Jesus, "Lord, if you had been here, my brother would not have died. And even now I know that whatever you ask from God, God will give you." Jesus said to her, "Your brother will rise again." Martha said, "I know he will rise again in the resurrection at the last day." And Jesus said to her, "I am the resurrection and the life. He who believes in me, though he die, yet shall he live, and whoever lives and believes in me shall never die." And what fascinates me about this, there's almost a Zen quality in what Jesus says. He talks about the brother will rise again, and Martha puts the resurrection somewhere far away, at the end of time. It's going to be somewhere else. And Jesus says, no, it's in the present moment. And I think there's something, there's a profound quality about that. The vivifying and the possibility of new life that is in the present moment in encounter with the sacred. It's, you know, I think there's very much the conventional thinking that resurrection is something that happens some other time, some faraway place, that sort of thing. And there's something very potent in that revivifying, you might say revivifying energy of the sacred that can be accessed in the present moment. And also what fascinates me just about that conversation, he's talking to someone who's a friend, and there's a kind of relationship of intimacy there. This is something we also see in the Hindu tradition, the bhakti tradition with Krishna. And so there's the immediacy and the intimacy that I see in this, and the tremendous life-giving power. Now the final one, I am the way, the truth, and the life. And this is from the Last Supper discourse in John. And this one I think is particularly interesting in a multi-religion context, when we realize that it could be read as not I'm the way, but I am the Tao. Not just I'm the truth, but I am the Dharma. I am the Tao, the Dharma, and the life. And I think there's something very profound there. Bringing in the Tao really accents, you might call, the unknowable aspect of the sacred, the profound, mysterious aspect of the sacred, which theoretically is true in all religions, theoretically it's true in Christianity, but it's not often highlighted. And it's just this profound juxtaposition, the Tao, the Dharma, and the life, the whole idea that the way, the nature of the truth that you find in the sacred, and the nature of the way that the sacred leads you on, is something that leads to a deeper kind of being alive, a deeper kind of vitality and fulfillment, life at a whole other level. And so I'll say that I see several elements when we put these together. There's the element of the nourishment that we get from the sacred. There's the element of the humility and dependence we have on the sacred. There's the element of tremendous humility within the presence of the sacred. There's the element of intimacy with the sacred. And there's the element of the mysteriousness and the utter unknowability of this, unknowability of the sacred. And I think certain traditions highlight pieces of those, but not all of them. You know, for example, conventional Christianity very much highlights the intimacy, the humility, the nourishment, the dependence on the sacred. It doesn't necessarily highlight the unknowability of the sacred. Whereas that might be much more highlighted by someone who's studying Buddhism, but then they might not have the intimacy or the humility. And I think it really, the challenge is to hold all of those perspectives together, to derive nourishment of it, to be humble, to recognize one's dependency on it, and yet at the same time be intimate with it and experience it in all its immediacy, but also in all its unknowability. So what I am experiencing is both intimate and something that is beyond all my ability to understand. To hold all of those together, I think in some ways is the essence of the mystical experience. So at this point, I'll read the quotes. So So at the top of the quote sheet, I have the Johani nine I statements. Then we have this wonderful quote from Rumi: step out of the circle of time and into the circle of love. From Thomas Aquinas: I would rather feel compassion than know the meaning of it. From the scientist Michael Faraday: nothing is too wonderful to be true. I love that one. Nothing is too wonderful for it to be true. Ralph Waldo Emerson said, to the poet, to the philosopher, to the saint, all things are friendly and sacred, all events profitable, all days holy, all men divine. Tolstoy said, truth like gold is to be obtained not by its growth, but by washing away from it all that is not gold. That one is particularly wonderful. A couple from Gandhi: far more indispensable than food for the physical body is spiritual nourishment for the soul. One can do without food for a considerable time, but a man of spirit cannot exist for a single second without spiritual nourishment. Gandhi also said, it has often occurred to me that the seeker of truth has to be silent. Oswald Chambers said, you have to be the nourishment for other people's souls until they learn to feed on God. And that's a particularly interesting take on nourishment. Not only are we nourished by the sacred, but it's our job to nourish other people spiritually. Hermann Hesse said, within you, there's a stillness and a sanctuary to which you can retreat at any time and be yourself. One of my favorite quotes from Einstein: there are only two ways to live your life. One is as though nothing is a miracle. The other is as if everything is. Mother Teresa said, the great disease in the West is not TB or leprosy. It is being unwanted, unloved, and uncared for. We can cure physical diseases with medicine, but we can only cure loneliness, despair, and hopelessness in love. There are many in the world who are dying for a piece of bread, but there are many more dying for a little love. The poverty in the West is a different kind of poverty. It is not only a poverty of loneliness, but also of spirituality. There is a hunger for love, and there is a hunger for God. Elizabeth Kubler-Ross said, it is not the end of the physical body that should worry us. Rather, our concern must be to live while we're still alive, to release our inner selves from the spiritual death that comes with living behind a facade designed to conform to external definitions of who and what we are. Pema Chodron said quite simply, fear is a natural reaction of moving closer to the truth. She also said, the truth you believe and cling to makes you unavailable to hear anything new. Majaya Sati Bhagavat said, when you plant a seed of love, it is you that blossoms. Marianne Williamson said, something amazing happens when we surrender and just love. We melt into another world, a realm of power already within us. The world changes when we change. The world softens when we soften. The world loves us when we choose to love the world. Debbie Ford said, surrender is the ultimate sign of strength and the foundation for spiritual life. Steve Maraboli says, when you find yourself in need of spiritual nourishment, it is in the opportunities to serve others that you will find the abundance you seek. Donna Goddard said, spiritual principles, if true, are true for everyone. That is the yardstick that validates their authenticity. Spiritual ideals also have the universal power to heal. Healing is the building block of both individual and collective spiritual evolution. Stephen Richard says, when you can connect to the silence within you, that is when you can make sense of the disturbance going on around you. And finally, Anton Saint-Martin says, "Truth has a power only the courageous can handle."